Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alcock, Honey Masood, Ravi Karan, Dina Gusta, Chantal Berman, Amy Littlefield, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Mesta Gadars. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Bob Longman with your WUSB concert billboard for Tuesday, June 12th. Dave Matthews Band with Fits in the Tantrums will be at the Nikon at Jones Beach Theater in Wontaw, 7 p.m. That's both Tuesday and Wednesday. Ricky Roche will be at Patty's Loft in Massapequa at 8:30 p.m. Up Front and Personal with Jay Holiday and Eric Roberson will be at B.B. King's in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Jazz Festival with McCoy Tyner, Bella Fleck, Soul Live, Savion Glover, and Cassandra Wilson at the Blue Note. The festival will be going on all week, and that starts at 8:30 p.m. Your concert billboard for Wednesday, June 13th. Matthew Sweet will be performing the live Girlfriend album at the Bolton Center in Bayshore at 8 p.m. Michael Kiwanuka will be at the Highline Ballroom in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Annie Morgan will be at Dockers Waterside in Quag. Paula Atherton in Interplay will be at Battery Gardens in Manhattan. And Bootsy Collins will be at B.B. King's in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Your concert billboard for Thursday, June 14th. Robbie Foulkes will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 8 p.m. Michael Kiwanuka, Laura Marling, and Willie Mason will be at the Prospect Park Band Shell in Brooklyn at 7 p.m. Mogwai will be at the Webster Hall in Manhattan. Flogging Molly will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village at 8 p.m. At the Music Hall of Williamsburg, Brooklyn, GZA of Wu-Tang Clan and Grupo Fantasma play the Liquid Swords album. Caroline Doctorow will be at the 89 North in Patchogue at 8 p.m. And Fusion Collective will be at Hennessy's in Huntington, 8 p.m. Oh, how can I forget? Little Richard at B.B. King's at 7:30 p.m.
This has been your concert billboard for this week. Tune in to WUSB each day to hear more about your favorite performers and where they're playing. Or go to the online concert billboard at WUSB.FM, which has a schedule for upcoming months, so you can plan ahead. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
Hello, hello. Okay, good. The microphone is working. Wonderful. Yes, I was about to say, indeed, you are listening to the mighty WUSB, but you know what? We're not so mighty. We can't even get our microphones to work. How many years have I been complaining about this? All right, it's WUSB Stony Brook, where you might hear us, you might not, depending on the mood of the electricity in here. It's 6:02 on a Tuesday night. Time, once again, for Off the Wall. We'll be right back. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. I'm sorry for bitching out the station before, but, you know, it's just so frustrating when you do a talk show and the microphone doesn't work. It really is the most frustrating thing, I think, that could happen. More frustrating than the excessive heat. More frustrating than the CD players not working. More frustrating than the phone's not working. More frustrating than having nothing to talk about. The most frustrating thing of all. It's not having that microphone. And that's what this place is all about. Having a voice. Having a way of speaking out. And the voice goes two ways. No, three ways. The voice goes all different kinds of directions. You can speak. And we can speak. And other things can speak that we don't know of yet. It's basically a magical place where radio occurs. Emmanuel here. Kyle's going to join us in just a little bit. We have a interesting story attached to that as well. Those of you listening in the last week, very exciting. Very exciting here at Stony Brook. Yeah, Stony Brook is in the World Series. Now, how is that possible? Okay, I'll try and explain. I'll try and explain because I don't understand a lot of it. I do know the game is baseball. All right, we have a baseball team. We have in fact, all of our teams have the same nickname. They do that in some European countries, by the way. They have, like Real Madrid, for instance, it's both a football/soccer team and a basketball team. It's not the same guys going and playing both sports. And it's not the same people here at Stony Brook skipping all their classes and playing football, lacrosse, hockey, baseball. So, you know, we have a baseball and a softball team. I don't understand that. I don't understand why it's necessary to have both, because the games are so similar. And I know I'm going to get mail from the softball fans who say there's nothing, no similarity whatsoever between baseball and softball. Come on, guys. Really? You have a bat, right? You have a ball. You have bases that you run around, and you have people trying to stop you from doing that. It's basically the same thing. The ball's a little bigger. Okay. You know, I can make up a game, baseball, with a basketball-sized ball, all right? And, I'll call that mega softball or something. Or mega big ball. I don't know. Something else. I'm not going to expect to have a whole league surrounding it. You know, it's similar enough. It's like, okay, we have an American football team and a Canadian football team. It's basically the same game, a little bit of a rule change. Just seems to me, I'm sorry, I'm going off script here, but it seems to me that if you're going to have a baseball team and a softball team, both called the Stony Brook Seawolves, I believe, right? And that must get confusing. Why not simply teach the softball players how to play baseball, okay, and use the funds, and it does cost money, that keeps the softball team going, and start, say, a cricket team? How about that? Yeah, I was just in England, you know, and there's this game over there called cricket that nobody understands. Nobody here understands, that is. I don't understand how it works, but it looks like a lot of fun. And I would pay good money to go and see people whacking things with mallets and running back and forth and shouting out all kinds of strange words. It's diversity. It's a university. That's what it's all about. You know, we should be playing all kinds of different sports. And maybe learning some things, too, at the same time. But anyway, to steer the truck back onto the road. Yes, Stony Brook apparently, and this is something I've been warning people about. The sports fans here at the university, I've been warning them about this. Actually, the non-sports fans, too. Over the years, over the decades, Stony Brook has become more and more into sports, into college athletics and competition and things like that. And I knew the day was going to come where one of our teams would start doing really well. Yeah, and when that happens, everybody starts paying attention to the school, to the people playing whatever game it is, and you get all this media attention, all these people running around saying, "Wow, look at Stony Brook! They're in the big time now," completely ignoring all the other things that we do. You know, the prize-winning physicists that are discovering the meaning of life just across the street, or the mathematicians, a biologist, the occasional English major that writes something that makes sense. We have a whole health science center and a hospital, and there are buildings I don't even know what goes on in. And there's a whole underground tunnel system that I don't think I'm allowed to talk about. Point is that there's a lot going on here, but when you just have a winning sports team, that's all anybody thinks matters. And before you know it, there's just shrubbery cut out to say seawolves everywhere. People interrogate you to know if you want to know if you have all the sports statistics that you need to get through college. I can't find a parking space because everybody is running around watching games now, and somehow the whole meaning of the place is lost. Well, anyway, the point is, it is fun. It is fun. We're in the World Series, but apparently even that isn't as simple as I thought it was. I thought when I was told that Stonerbrook finally made the World Series, it's a great accomplishment. We had to beat teams all over the country, apparently. LSU was at Louisiana. Yeah, had to go all the way down there in the heat and humidity and win. And progress to the World Series. You think the College World Series, it's like the regular World Series. It's not. I thought it was just going to be a best of seven series or a best of five series or something like that. No, it's a whole other competition. There's eight teams. And it starts on Friday. In fact, you can listen to it here on WUSB, 4:45 p.m. We're going to be playing a team known as UCLA. Ever hear of them? Yeah. That's going to be... I hope we win. Hope we beat UCLA. You know, they're the ones that are in the Rose Bowl or whatever. You know, they're always on television playing some kind of sport and winning. And, of course, they're ranked number one. We seem to be ranked number four, which is pretty darn good, actually. It's amazing. We always pay attention here. By we, I mean the university community, to the football team, the basketball team, but never really heard much about the baseball team till now. Imagine if they all got good. You know, it'd be ridiculous. We'd be covering all these playoff games and championships and having to store the medals someplace and building shrines and buildings and all kinds of other things. And we'll sound like WUSPN with all the coverage, which, by the way, is amazing coverage. It really is exciting. You drive around and you're listening to what's going on. It's the play-by-play is incredible, and it's more testament to the talent that comes out of this place, WUSB. It'd be nice if, if we won an award every now and then. I understand they have parades for the baseball team and all kinds of... How about a parade for WUSB, huh? We've been broadcasting nonstop for decades. Nobody can stop us. They didn't get a parade? Okay, they just got people greeting them. Fine. Well, you know what? I would settle for that, people greeting us. Actually, we do have that sometimes when people are walking into the building. Strangers sometimes walk out of the forest and say, "Hey, looking forward to your program today." It's kind of creepy, but you never know. You meet some very interesting people walking out of the woods sometimes. But that's neither here nor there. We have the World Series beginning this Friday. Is it really the World Series? I mean, I don't want to get stuck on semantics here, but I have the same question with the other World Series. It's just the United States, right? I mean, we're good, but we're not the world. Get some Japanese teams over here, some Cuban teams, Mexican teams, and let's see how we do. I'm all for it. And then Sunday, there's another game. I don't know how this works. I have to go to the Wikipedia page on the College World Series and figure out how it works. Apparently, we play a different team on Sunday, but we don't know which one it is, either Arizona or Florida State. And then on Tuesday, next Tuesday, 7:45 p.m., won't affect our program. There's, I guess, game three and then game four on Thursday, and then game five, if necessary, on Friday. And I don't understand that, because if you're playing different teams, do they add up the scores of... We'll figure it out. You listen to this radio station and you'll learn, just like we are all learning. Then, if Stony Brook actually makes it that far, the actual World Series, best of three championship series, begins Sunday the 24th and runs to the 26th. So, yeah, wow, that's the most sports I've talked about in a long time, especially here at Stony Brook. But it's a weird thing. You turn on the local news and they're talking about Stony Brook, you know, in a good way. And all kinds of other facts and figures are being thrown around. And yeah, we are on ESPN. I'm not sure what number ESPN. It's not the regular ESPN. I think it's number three, maybe number two. Definitely number three. I can't really keep track. I've been watching Euro 2012. That's the European competition. I actually have it on in the background when I'm doing other things. And it's exciting to see because, well, you see how other countries act towards each other. You see the rivalries. You see England playing France. You see Ireland playing Croatia. All kinds of interesting rivalries that develop. And that's taking place this month in Poland and Ukraine, both places that I've been to in the past year, and saw the preparation going on for Euro. It's a big deal to them. Really is a big deal have the entire world show up and see their country and see how they can host this thing. And just like the Olympics in London later this year is a big deal for them. There's arguments for having these kinds of competitions and for not having them. Do they help people? Do they hurt people? Here in New York, when we were presented with the possibility of hosting the 2012 Olympics, the opinion was that it would not help us, that it would cause all kinds of problems, cost money, and not really be any benefit. And I stand by that belief. But seeing it in London, seeing the preparations there, it seems like they've gotten into the spirit of it. It might just work out. Who knows? And seeing the preparations going on in Poland and Ukraine last year for the Euro competition sure seemed like it was rejuvenating those countries in some way. So we'll see if it's something that pays off in the long run. It's always an iffy proposition at best. Okay, we have stories to tell, all kinds of other things going on. We're going to try and get a dial tone here. Let's see if it works this week. Is that coming over? You hear that all right? Okay, dial 9, make that a solid dial tone. There we go. Okay, I'm just taking some levels here. All right, that's good. You guys hearing that static? I'm getting static in my right... Oh, dear. Well, I was getting static in my right ear. I'm still getting static in my right ear when I move this knob. And that means there's dirt somewhere in that potentiometer on this. Oh, the phone hung up. Oh, boy. So we got to clean that out. We've got to, you know, one day I'm just going to do a show called Maintenance, and we'll just go through the entire board here and clean everything and maybe do a little bit of wiring, and it'll be like an instructive radio show. Of course, a lot of it probably won't make it onto the air because of that, but let's get another dial tone here, and we're going to call Kyle, who is not joining us in the studio tonight, and we'll be discussing that in just a moment. That's his phone ringing. Sounds like my phone ringing. Interesting.
Hello?
Hi, is this Kyle?
Speaking.
Kyle, Manuel Goldstein, WUSB Radio, Stony Brook, New York, home of the future World Series champions, the Stony Brook Seawolves.
Wow. I'm honored. I'm honored to be on the same station as the team. I'm sending out my best wishes to them. I'm going to be stocking up, getting ready. We're going to have all kinds of people over, and big, might have some dip, some ranch dip, and some, you know, some platters out. It'll be a good time.
You know, I hope so. I hope they realize how much they owe to us, because I don't think they'd be champions if it wasn't for this place. You know, because like I was saying before, when the microphone wasn't working, you need a voice. You need to have that voice. If that voice isn't there, you're powerless. And if the sports teams don't have that voice that gets out over the radio, they're nothing. Well, maybe there's something, but nobody knows about them.
Yeah, it's true.
So, you know, a little crumbs off the table here. You know, all the parades and banners and politicians coming by to shake people's hands. You know, stop on by here as well and maybe do some wiring yourself and get the place working again. That'd be nice. I'm bitter tonight. I don't know why I'm bitter. Well, first of all, Kyle, you're in Seattle now.
Yeah, I'm in Seattle now.
Something happened to us over the weekend that I think so spooked us out that you immediately went home to Seattle when actually you were planning on being here. Okay, we had a scary time on Saturday. You want to start from the beginning, what we wound up doing?
Yeah, I guess we rented I don't know, got our bags together and went for a little trip, you know, long distance, couple.
Yeah. We rented a car. We rented a nice car because we didn't want anything to be, well, first of all, none of the vehicles that we have would have made it, I don't think. But we also didn't want to have any kind of hassle with things breaking down or all kinds of other potential things like that. Basically, we've been involved in the hacker calendar. That's one of the things that we did over in England. We took some pictures. We discussed this last week going to Menwith Hill. In fact, we have some coverage of that that we'll bring to you in a future week of that particular trip. Menwith Hill being a massive listening post over in the UK.
Right, right. And we took a road trip down through a couple of different states. I don't even know the geography very well. It's terrible. But it's fun to explore, and so we drove around a little bit. We wanted to go down and get some good seafood and stuff down in Maryland because of the show. The Wire has it featured in it, and some other reasons, just to check it out.
There are three programs actually.
Life was.
There are three programs actually that feature. Well, I mean, you know, we're not that clueless as to the culture of other parts of the country. I mean, we did know that they had crabs in Baltimore, and but there are three television shows that are really, really good, and they sort of show you that world sometimes. Homicide: Life on the Streets, which was an NBC program,
right.
And then that led to The Corner, an HBO miniseries, and then the best show ever made, The Wire, also on HBO. And each of those programs, at some point, they were in either a place that sold crabs or they were having crabs themselves, some of the characters, and it's just a really kind of a cool thing. So that was one of the things we wanted to do. That was not the main reason we went down there, though. I want to make sure that people realize that we didn't.
It's also part of the surveillance theme, you know. It's kind of interesting, you know, we've been working on other stuff in other locations, but...
What, crabs are part of the surveillance theme?
I'm sorry?
Are crabs part of the surveillance theme? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's a tie-in with that. It's kind of interesting. And we were down there anyway. We were going to see the National Security Agency.
Yeah, or No Such Agency, as NSA sometimes stands for.
Correct. Yeah, we saw No Such Agency.
We're taking pictures of various examples of surveillance. And what better place to have an example of surveillance than the headquarters, where the most people listening to other people or whatever it is they're listening to are centered in Fort Meade, Maryland. It's between Baltimore and Washington, D.C. I'd been there in the past, and I figured that would be a good place to get a couple of shots of some, well, interesting bits of technology.
Yeah, it's definitely an iconic image in the image of, like, the Defense Department, the that whole, like, executive branch side of things, and I don't know, we were really interested and wanted to check out the area because, you know, there's all kinds of people and communities that support that, you know, you want to see the community around it too, and it kind of places it in your own identity, like, or your own perception of yourself as part of that. So I don't know, it was instructive. It was really, really spooky at the same time, as you mentioned. So
absolutely, yes, definitely.
Yeah, we went down there. They actually have a museum there, and we knew that existed. So we wanted to go check it out. See, I mean, it was on a weekend. We figured, you know, that's a touristy kind of day, right? So we made a trip of it. And
well, not a whole lot of tourists go to the NSA, I'll tell you that right now. My original idea was to do what I did before and simply drive onto their parking lot, like I had done in the past. It was no big deal. In fact, there used to be this whole complex. It's a military base. It's an army base, do you know?
Yeah, it's Fort Meade is like a city in and of itself. I mean,
yeah.
They've got a golf course on it, apparently.
They do. But, I mean, in addition to being the listening, where all the people involved in surveillance are, there is a military post of some sort. And I used to go there, well, not a lot, but a couple of times. And if you drove around a little bit, you'd come upon a shopping center inside the base. And this shopping center didn't have a name, and the food inside that you could buy was kind of no frills, didn't really have any brand names. But the prices were so incredibly cheap. And I actually was able to shop there a couple of times before they changed policy, and they said you had to have a military ID to shop there. But at least you could still go there. Now you can't even go there. You can't even get onto any part of the base, military or surveillance. They have checkpoints at every single road, or particular roads are just simply blocked.
Right.
So the whole mood has changed. And I kind of expected that. I don't think I've been there since 9/11, so I suppose that had something to do with it. So it made things a little difficult, but I wouldn't say it made things impossible, would you?
I don't know. The vantage points are really, you know, really obscured. I mean, it's got a huge campus, and I don't know. I'd been on bases before, like you said. I guess all you need is a vehicle ID, and you know, when people live on a facility like that, and I don't know how many people really live on the NSA campus, but I guess there's a base there, so. They have families too. Like, it depends on how much family housing they have, but you know, and their kids like are you know, coming home after school. Sometimes they go to other schools outside of that facility. I don't know. It just depends on how it's arranged. But I'd been like a guest on local bases we've talked about, like the Joint Base Lewis McChord down here in Tacoma area and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think But we didn't actually try to get through a gate or anything like that. So we just sort of were in the area and checking out the town. And, you know, there were, like, pubs and, you know, it's pretty normal. Like I said, a lot of support groups to go into it. But I don't know. I didn't feel like we weren't allowed to. Like, there's pretty good signage on, and even some of their employee exits were coned off, I think maybe for the weekend or something. But we didn't feel like we couldn't go off on certain areas, especially like where the Cryptologic Museum is, and there's a little park in there, and there was like a, you know, couple there at one point when we were looking, you know, like people obviously gather there, maybe guys meet their families there, or, you know, they work there or something like that, you know, kind of after work picking somebody up or who knows.
By the museum, yes, we could drive up there without going through any barriers, and there were a couple of people there, but the museum was closed. But everything else pretty much was off guards or off limits to us. And they made that pretty
right.
clear.
Without having to, like, that main entrance we did see, I think that may have been access to a BX. And I think, you know, there was a lot of traffic there. We didn't obviously want to go up and have a conversation with anybody because we get the point, you know, at that point there's a lot of signage. And we're very cognizant of a lot of the signage. You know, that's really important. Just for directions and figuring out where you are and stuff like that. But, you know, you got to read exactly what it's saying and, you know, be cognizant of what you're doing, like what, you know, what your plan is. And so it was a lot of fun too. I don't know, just seeing the facility and comparing it also with my experience out in the UK recently. So.
Right. Where we drove up to Menwith Hill and hung out at a sheep farm for a while, taking pictures of, of the big golf balls and all that. We couldn't get onto the base. The sun was starting to go down, and so we felt we'd make the most of it and just try and get as many pictures as we could from off base of the facility. There's a whole satellite dish array there that I couldn't even see this time. I've driven up to it in the past, but not being able to get onto the base, of course, that wasn't possible. And it's very hard to see it from the highway. So what we did was we just drove around the entire circumference trying to get a sense as to where everything was. And then we just kind of drove around a bit more slowly and tried to take as many pictures as possible. And we even faked some tire trouble at one point on the highway so that we could stop and you could get some steady pictures without us actually moving. But those are the tricks we had to play in order to get anything.
Yeah, you kind of want to, you know, keep it moving there, but at the same time, people have to stop. You know, there's regular roads around there. It's a public area. It is well patrolled, though, and I don't know. I got the sense that there was definitely, you know, definitely observation in progress, you know.
Well, they are the NSA, after all, so yeah, I would imagine they're watching everything. And I guess they were watching us. I'm not sure if they were watching us throughout the entire escapade or at the end when we parked in that parking lot, the public one by the museum, and just kind of walked around a bit and looked at the facility off in the distance behind a fence. That apparently was enough just to do that, even though it was a public parking lot. But just us looking at the facility aroused some suspicion. What we did after that, we drove over to the museum building, which was closed, Just took an interest in that. You took a picture of a sign by the museum. Do you have that in front of you by any chance? Would you like to read what's on the sign, or you want to maybe keep that for another show?
I could pull it up if you want to.
Well, it's just such an incredible list of things not to do. And it's also very confusing because the sign isn't in the facility. The sign is outside the facility, facing in a different direction. You don't pass over any gates to get to where it is. But I imagine it's the same sign that's on the fence throughout the entire facility. And you were very right to want to get a picture of this because it's not the kind of thing you see every day.
Right. So it's got a lot of text on it. It's centered paragraphs, by the way.
Okay.
All centered.
All centered, yeah.
The text. Anyway, it says, warning, restricted area. This area has been declared a restricted area by authority of the director, National Security Agency / Chief, Central Security Service, pursuant to the provisions of the Internal Security Act of 1950 and implementing executive orders and directives. Next paragraph. Unauthorized entry is prohibited. All persons, property, and vehicles entering or exiting this area are liable to search. By entering this area, you consent to search. Unauthorized removal of clarified defense material or U.S. governmental property is prohibited. Unauthorized photography, note-taking, making of drawings, maps, or other graphic representations are prohibited unless specifically authorized by the Chief Office of Security. Items in the categories listed below are prohibited within the restricted area and are subject to confiscation, and violators may be prosecuted. Firearms and ammunition, explosives and incendiaries, volatile or hazardous substances, photographic and imagery equipment and media recording and sound equipment and media electronic and computer equipment and media transmitting and receiving equipment and attachments, contraband or illegal substances.
I like how they tack on the illegal substances at the end of all that. I don't think they really care about that so much. It's amazing to me that we're going to the belly of the beast, to where all the surveillance of the world is pretty much coordinated, and they don't want you taking any pictures of them.
Yeah, it's a little ironic, I guess. Yeah.
It's pretty annoying, actually. Is that the whole sign, or is there more?
That's it. And, you know, we saw some other signs in the parking area that said no demonstrations and, like, no picketing, I think.
No picketing. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I don't know. You know, does that mean
it's a labor thing? Like, people that work there would picket?
I don't think.
Oil drums out and start, you know, burning, you know, like other unions do?
Yeah, I don't think that people there would do something like that ever. Even if given the chance. I think they're referring to people that come there to demonstrate against what it is that they do inside, which, of course, is a complete secret. I mean, what a crazy place that is. And just to even have a sign like that. When are you supposed to read that sign? I mean, are you supposed to drive past a sign with all that text and somehow get it all? Or are you supposed to pull up to it and stare at it intently for a few minutes like we had to do? Which
I think it's meant to slow you down so that they can talk to you.
Yeah, that could very well be it.
It's now, ridiculous.
It really is insane. This was in sort of an alcove off the parking lot. There was nobody else around. It was around the corner from a gas station. And the gas station was in kind of a weird place because, well, there was nothing else but the museum down that road. It was really the last thing that we were going to do. We basically had spent a couple of hours driving around, taking vantage point pictures in various other places from off the site. This was the only time that we parked the car and walked around a little bit. I actually was looking for a garbage can because we had two plastic cups of coffee that we wanted to throw out. And I walked the perimeter of the parking lot looking for garbage cans. But I also used that as an excuse to walk the perimeter of the parking lot so I could see more of what was out there. And apparently that was what did it. That was what got somebody to report us, because when we were leaving that little alcove where the museum was, we were passing the gas station, which had no customers. It was a Shell station. And one of the NSA police cars or police SUVs was coming up the road that we were going down. And I thought, oh boy, here we are. You know, this is the moment of truth. Are we going to actually, we're 5 seconds away from leaving the place. Is this where we're going to get stopped? Sure enough, it was. The guy waved his hand and told me to stop. He couldn't pull me over because he was going the other way. So he just waved his hand. And, you know, I rolled down my window and said, yes, how can I help you? And he basically asked me to pull over. You want to take the story from there?
Yeah, I don't know. He just I don't know.
Yeah, he had a good quote at the beginning.
The car showed up and then had you know our IDs for a while.
Yeah, but Kyle, he basically he was about 12 for one thing. He was very young. What were the first words out of his mouth when he was explaining why he pulled us over, why he had to do what he's doing? You don't remember?
Oh, well, because you know who we are, you know, it's that whole attitude, is that what you're getting
at?
Yeah,
you've mentioned this about 14 times since, so I figured you had the quote right on your brain there.
Oh, well, yeah, it was something to that effect, you know, you understand it's taking a while, we gotta write a report, you know, and we have to, you know, it's just because of who we are, and we were kind of curious at that. I was like, yeah, well, who are you? You know, why, what's the problem? And they basically had a report or something that we had walked around in the parking lot.
Yeah, the ultimate crime. And, of course, he never said who he was. He just said, well, you know, because of who we are, we've got to check into this, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so you know what? He took my license, and I figured, okay, he's just going to look me up, see if I'm, you know, a notorious spy or something like that. Came back, then he wanted your license, and basically another cop showed up, and they just sort of alternated coming by, asking us questions. They wanted to know, so why did you come down? Did you drive all the way down here just to come to this place? And of course, the answer to that was yeah, but we didn't say that. We said, well, you know, we were just sort of driving around and we wanted to go to D.C., but then it started getting dark, so we turned around and we saw this place, and we just thought we'd, you know, look for, see if the museum was open, but apparently it's not. And then I was trying to throw out these coffee cups, and I still had the coffee cups in the car because I couldn't find a garbage can and I wasn't about to litter. And, you know, I really regret not handing him the coffee cups and saying, hey, could you take care of this for me? You know, just to see what would have happened. But, you know, I decided to play it safe because you don't know what's going to happen with these people. Now, in the end, there were four NSA police SUVs that had pulled into that road because we were there. Two of them supposedly were just refueling in that very same Shell station, which apparently that's the only purpose it serves, is to refuel NSA police cars. Right. And basically they held us there for, what, a good 25 minutes or so, occasionally coming back asking questions. So how did you guys meet? And did you they were trying to trap us, weren't they, in a couple of questions?
Yeah, a little bit. It was a little like so you stopped by, you saw this place, you saw the NSA employees only exit. And we knew that wasn't true. The NSA employee exits were all coned off. You couldn't exit anyway without running into a barrier. It was clearly closed for the weekend or something. So it was like kind of trapping you and like, oh yeah, so you saw that sign. And we're like, no, we saw, you know, signs for the museum, so that, you know, in the main entrance, and just, you know, went to check out the planes they had there, and, you know, they've got benches and like a little you know, ceremony space of sorts, which is interesting. You know?
I was going to say I admired the architecture and I just wanted to know more about who built it.
Exactly.
But I didn't say that either. There's a lot of things I wanted to say that I didn't say. I was playing it cool, you know, being nice and calm. I knew they weren't really going to get anything on us. And if they did decide to interrogate us more, you know, inside a holding cell or something, well, then we'd see more of the inside of the place. So it's, you know, win-win for us. alas, that was not to be. They basically just kept asking us a bunch of questions. One of the questions they asked me, which I thought was kind of weird, they said, so how long did it take you to get here from New York? As if testing me to see if I knew how far away New York was. If I had said, yeah, 12 hours, then they would have known that I was lying, but who knows what I was lying about. It's just incredible to me that simply walking around in a parking lot gets this kind of a response. How many NSA police cars do you think there are? We had four. How many could there be in the entire place? What percentage of the U.S. intelligence community was focused on us in that 25 minutes?
I don't know. There's a lot of phone calling. I don't know.
They were on a cell phone. They had a little wire going into their heads. Of course, they had their car radio thing too, which probably is the same device. And and they were spending an awful lot of time just looking us up. What could they have been looking up? They basically had our license. They had the car rental agreement, which I gave them. It takes a second to look that up. What was he talking about on the phone? Who was he talking to? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah, I don't know. I was really curious. Like you said, we didn't really say anything back. I mean, we're not going to, but there's like, that I was characterizing, how we were seeing it and how observant we were, just checking it out. So in the moment, we were just sort of observing them, and it was interesting like that. How much is dedicated to this very moment? I mean, really, I guess when you walk around the parking lot at night or whatever, they want to talk to you. Or
well, it wasn't really. It wasn't even night. It was dusk. It was getting to be dusk. It was still light.
Getting late.
Yeah. In fact, you were still taking pictures at that point. And I think what we did was we split up in the parking lot. I went one direction. You went the other. Because I really was looking for a garbage can, and you wanted to take pictures. And I think by doing that, whoever it was that narked on us was only fixating on either one of us or couldn't see what we were doing completely and didn't notice that you were taking pictures. Because of all the questions they asked us, not one had to do with what we were there for, the fact that you were taking pictures for a couple of hours. They didn't see that. We apparently got that right by them.
Yeah.
And I know they would have been concerned about that because that's that's something that's in their sign right there.
Well, I don't know. It was beautiful light. It was a really, really great day for driving and to go and visit. And we were able to photograph and at least take note of the signs, so we could read them later, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that, we didn't do any photographing where the signs, behind any signs.
No,
we just
no.
wanted to see the signs and, be able to remember what they said. And, we didn't do anything inside the facility or anything like that.
No, we walked up to the fence. We didn't even touch the fence. We just looked at the fence or looked
right.
at the sign, which I assume was there for us to read. So that's all we did. We simply looked with our eyes and, of course, took some pictures with our cameras. Is it really illegal now to take pictures of something from behind a fence that you can see from a public road? Some people will say yes, but it's incredible to me that, first of all, this whole place has changed so much that you can't even get near it anymore, but that we accept such rigid rules and regulations as to what it is that you can do as an individual person who helps to fund this place in the first place. The fact that the NSA exists is because of our tax dollars. We should have some say as to what it is they're doing. We're not even allowed to look at them, let alone ask what it is they're doing back there. It's really pretty disgusting.
Yeah, you kind of think about that, and especially when you interface with people that work there, like that, and you realize that what kind of job that is for them. And it's just interesting to think about the complexity of the organization, like what really is going on as far as your contributions to it as a taxpayer and stuff like that. And especially with photography, I mean, you can do a lot with lenses, as we said, like from public land, but just to feel like you can't, or that all the secrecy and stuff, just I don't know, it's a bit unnerving if you realize that you pay for something that is a bit disruptive to your privacy and to freedom. I mean, true freedom, I don't know, these words are getting kind of redefined and warped these days, but I don't know.
Yeah, and what we were looking at the hive mind of surveillance for the entire world. When I say for the entire world, not on behalf of the entire world. Basically, if you're listening to this program from a different country, that building is involved in listening in on what your country is doing, what your citizens are doing. And it's something that as a global citizen, I think we all have the right to know what it is that's going on there, especially as an American citizen, because we pay for it in the first place. This kind of thing just really, it rubs me the wrong way. It's a fascinating place to look at, certainly, but we deserve to know what it is that's that they're up to, especially when it's used against us, which it has been in recent years. And we'll have a lot more information on that in coming shows and coming weeks. But Kyle, I wanted to ask you, since the sign said it was very particular about what we couldn't do. We couldn't record things. We didn't record anything there. Couldn't take pictures. We didn't take pictures beyond the sign. Took a picture of the sign. They didn't say anything about you're not allowed to describe what it is that you saw. I don't think that was one of the regulations. So to the best of your knowledge, can you just recount to somebody who had never seen this place before how it struck you when you were approaching it, what you were thinking when you saw the buildings, what kinds of different buildings there were, what kinds of apparatus did you see? You know, something that would be really handy for, say, a Russian spy or somebody to know. No, I'm just kidding. No. If you are a Russian spy or an Iranian operative or something like that, do not listen to this part of the program because we're going to explain what the NSA looks like.
Well, they have a little, like, trail, like a little walking trail you can go on that goes from the parking lot to the museum. That's kind of cool. I mean, you know, that's scary. You know?
That's all you're going to describe as a walking trail?
Oh, you want other things like, okay.
Yeah,
well,
you know, kind of like...
I don't know. I think... Yeah, I mean, you're spot on with the fact that some people aren't even allowed in this country. You know, they wouldn't be able to get the vantage, and we have to be vigilant as citizens of this country and the world. And there was just a lot of buildings and infrastructure.
What kind of building? Were they old buildings, new buildings? Concrete?
Yeah, I mean, there's some old, very old stone buildings that's a bit, I guess, brutalist in the sense of being very, or even like Eastern. I don't know, is that even a great way to describe it? Eastern European?
Maybe Stony Brook building. Architecture.
Big block building. Yeah, okay, there you go.
Yeah, yeah, sort of Stony like Brook. That. It does encompass it. People know what we're talking about.
Yeah. A lot of stuff for like climate control, and I don't know. I've read up online and like in the encyclopedia about some of the stuff they have there. Like they have their own like semiconductor facility apparently for electronic stuff, and you know, it's probably pretty self-sustaining. There was a lot of power lines in the area and stuff like that.
And then you see all of a sudden looming over a building this gigantic golf ball looking apparatus.
Yeah, they have their fair share of those. I feel like they still have an array of radio telescopes somewhere that are more exposed, or like maybe it's just in a central part of that acreage that you can't see.
Yeah, they do, because I've been there and I've seen them, and it's sad that we couldn't get to those because it looks really cool.
Yeah, and that's probably why they're uncovered, because nobody can see it from anywhere except Google Maps or some crud. But I don't know. I saw a lot of fences and a lot of support vehicles, like storage stuff you might see on a base.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what else. They have their own security cameras within the facility, and that's I guess what we got a lot of from reading the sign, because you basically are being warned that on the property, if you're inside the property, these things apply. So you got to imagine that looms over everybody who is an employee's head that's there.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of hell would that be? I don't know.
I think you get used to it. It's like
to think about, but we did notice some on their own buildings. So that's, you know, aside from being surveyors, that was something surprising that they survey themselves. And, you know, you don't think about that, I guess, when you think of them as a global surveyor, you know, surveying
right. All
of the people and all sorts of traffic and information.
Of course, you can only imagine what goes on inside the buildings. I've never gotten that close to what it's like. If you're interested, though, actually from a 1980s perspective, read a book called The Puzzle Palace by James Bamford. And that's an excellent examination of what the NSA was about. But keep in mind, that's about 30 years ago. It's changed quite a bit since then. But even back then, it was incredibly scary and Orwellian. And the NSA, for a long time, was not even officially admitted to. That's how I got the name Gnosis Agency from its initials. It was not something, it was in a secret budget. It was not revealed to the public until I think sometime in the 60s, maybe 70s. And I'm sure there are other organizations like that that we don't know about, other complexes that we are not allowed to be a part of, to even see, to go to like we did. So all in all, you know, it was definitely worthwhile going down there. We did get at least one decent shot. I mean, I think we got a few. So if you get the 2013 Hacker Calendar, which I understand will be around for Hope Number 9 this July, you might just see a picture from Fort Meade, Maryland.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty dramatic there. And that picture got us in trouble just for going there. But, you know, imagine, okay, we had four NSA police cars, you know, basically centered on us. But what if two other people had been on the opposite side of the NSA doing the exact same thing? Who would they send then? Do they have four more cars? Would they have to take two of these cars? And then what if more people show up in other parts of the complex? It just seems like they'll either have to call for reinforcements from someplace or you can overwhelm them pretty easily. They're looking for something to do. Because people just don't go down there.
Yeah. I don't know. If it turned into a large, like, demonstration or picket, you know, I think that they'd call in people from the base. You'd see more military, like, troop-type people, troops.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
sort of thing. But I don't know. Imagine if people went and visited and you know, checked it out with this much. I mean, it was a lot of people to respond to something that was really benign, and I don't know. It's still a hassle to stop and to talk to somebody when you know you're not doing anything that isn't outside of your rights as a citizen. So, and I don't know. Just should be less of something people are less anxious about.
It is always scary when you get pulled over. I imagine most of our listeners probably have been pulled over by somebody. But I've been pulled over by all manner of cops. This is the first time the NSA cops have pulled me over. It's scary. It always is scary. You find yourself shaking a bit. I believe you had the same reaction. And, of course, you hightailed it back to Seattle immediately after this happened.
Maybe it was why, but
it was not why. It's basically a scheduling thing, and you got back in a couple of weeks to work on the conference. So don't panic, folks. You know, it's an inconvenience at best, and something traumatic at worst. And I guess that's the message they want to send: is don't do this again. How could we ever do it again? How could we ever go down there and just hang out in that area? Well, I think I've got the right to do that. I think we both should have the right to not only go to where the fence ends, but to go inside and to get a tour of the place, to be told what's this all for? What is it you guys are doing? What are your objectives?
What's in the basement?
Yeah, what's in the basement and the attic and all those other places? We mentioned to the NSA cops that, you know, we were just looking around and we want to go to Baltimore and get some crabs. And the guy started telling us places to go, which I thought was kind of funny, you know.
Yeah, he was trying to do the good cop thing, but it was painful for him.
Yeah, well, you know, they're federal cops. They're very polite. They always call you, they call you sir before they tase you or do whatever it is they're going to do. And always very, very clean cut, very young, and very respectable. You got to remember who it is they're working for and what it is that they want. And, of course, the crab place he was guiding us to was one of the biggest tourist ones, and I think it was even a chain. It wasn't what we wanted at all. We wound up at a place, if you watch The Wire, it was like on one of the streets where I think Omar lived or something. And it was awesome. We went and we went to this place that all the locals were going to. It was a takeout only place. In fact, we found out later this place was actually on The Wire. Season 5, you can see a scene. We're not going to tell you the name of it, but you can figure that out. And then, of course, we had all these crabs. We got, I think, a dozen crabs. Although the guy, we asked for guidance, and the guy was very nice to us. He was telling us the difference between male crabs and female crabs. There really is a big difference besides the male and female thing. He took care of us, threw in a couple of extra crabs, which at the time seemed like a favor. Later on, it was really too much to handle. But you get these little mallets that you have to basically beat the crab with to open the shell. Hard to do in a car because, you know, we didn't have a place to go and it wasn't exactly the nicest neighborhood. So we wound up at this rest stop. In fact, the rest stop was called the Maryland House right off the interstate. And we just hung out on a table and bench outside the rest area where people were just streaming back and forth from buses, going to the bathroom, various things like that. And we were just sitting out there whacking crabs merrily for, I think, about an hour and a half.
Yeah, that was fun. And you saw all kinds of people coming through, going back home to Maryland, or you know, vice versa. And it was really fun. We didn't really count the crabs. We sort of lost count.
No, I counted. I had six, and that's where I stopped because I couldn't do more than six. It was very spicy, and a lot of work to get at the crab meat. And this guy, this wise guy, threw in at least two or three more, and I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't have any more. That, you know, the first couple are fun. The next couple, you're like aware that you're eating a lot of crabs, and then when it comes down to five and six, how am I going to get through this? That said, they were very good and very well prepared, but boy, it's something else.
Yeah, definitely. It was authentic though. We enjoyed it, and. It was a good little road trip to see some stuff down in a couple states away. It's amazing the differences in such amount of space, you know, going actually traveling state to state like that.
Absolutely, yeah. The culture in Baltimore is really incredible, and every city has its own traditions, its own style of food and things like that. And you know, one of the fondest memories I'll always carry is just sitting there at that rest stop, you know, whacking at crabs with little wooden mallets and having people going in and out of the rest stop wondering what in God's name we were doing. That and, of course, being interrogated by the NSA police, two of my fondest memories.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Kyle, we are out of time. You know, we could talk for hours about this. It was an interesting adventure. I'm sure we'll have many others. The important thing is that the Hacker Calendar is being prepared along with all the other projects that we're involved in. Any closing remarks from you?
Oh, well, I'm just unpacking my backpack and, you know, catching up on stuff and, I might make a sandwich later. I don't know. It's good to be back. I really enjoy New York and all the people out there, especially in Stony Brook and on Long Island there. It's pretty nice, and I enjoyed myself. I got to ride around a little bit and see some of the natural beauty and stuff, and of course the city is really, really cool. I enjoy New York City, and I don't know. I'll be keeping my bags partially packed to head back and visit you all again soon.
Yeah, well, we'll see you in a couple of weeks, actually, because the conference preparations are underway and all kinds of other fun adventures to be had. If you want to write to us, tell us anything that you know about the NSA or other intelligence agencies or secrets or things like that, our email address is otw@2600.com. That's off the wall, @2600.com. And for Kyle, this is Emmanuel. We'll see you again next week. And, well, good night, Kyle.
Good night.